You're starting a new chapter. Feels good, starting a new chapter. I've been on chapter 6 for a long time. And this chapter 7 through through 11 are extremely important verses. These several of them. The Atmarama verse is in that section. There's a whole chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita of Lord Chaitanya explaining that verse. He explained it twice. He explained it to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and then again he explained it to Sanatana Goswami, who heard, I heard you had this explanation of this Atmaram verse. Can you do it again? So he did it again. And there are three or four verses that are commented upon or referred to and commented upon in the Sandarvas of Jiva Goswami 4 or 5 times. So they're very important verses. We're going to touch on one of them this morning. So, where did we end up with chapter 6? Narada answered Vyasa's question about his feeling lack of satisfaction, insufficiency, this pinch in the heart. Why is that? So he answered that question, gave his own example as one who was also in that position and went beyond that position, instructed him what to emphasize in his penultimate or consummate literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the principle that it should enshrine, and then played upon his veena and went to the next place to do some service for Krishna. Narada has gone. Vyasa is now alone in the middle of the forest, in his hermitage. And the sages of Naimisharanya, they're very eager to hear what happened next. What did Vyasa do then? So that's where we are. Rishi Shonaka, as he's heading the sages in Naimisharanya, asked, "Oh, Sutta, the great and transcendently powerful Vyasadeva heard everything from Sri Narada Muni, so after Narada's departure, what did Vyasadeva do?" Prabhupada's summary. In this chapter, the clue for describing Srimad Bhagavatam is picked up as Maharaj Parikshit is miraculously saved in the womb of his mother. That's one sentence, is the storyline. After Vyasadeva followed the instruction, he had a certain realization, and he began the composition of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna Katha. And then suddenly we find ourselves in this narration about the Pandavas and Ashwatthama killing the 5 sons of the Pandavas and Arjun pursuing Ashwatthama and bringing Ashwatthama before Draupadi, and that whole scene comes in chapter 7. So we'll talk more about that. Prabhupada is just giving the storyline. But it's in relation to what the Srimad Bhagavatam is. It's Krishna Katha. Anyway. This was caused by Droni or Ashwatthama, who was Acharya Drona's son, who killed the five sons of Draupadi while they were asleep, for which he was punished by Arjuna before commencing the great epic Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Vyasadeva realized the whole truth by trance in devotion. Text 2. This is Sutta's response. Sri Sutta said, on the western bank of the river Saraswati, which is intimately related with the Vedas, there is a cottage for meditation at Chamya Prasa, which enlivens the transcendental activities of the sages. Prabhupada's comment is, if you want to do this process of meditation as Vyasa did, you need a proper place. And the proper place then becomes an ashram. So Vyasa was a grahastha, so it was his ashram for meditation. And Prabhupada comments, the whole of the varnashram system is so designed so that each and every status of life is called ashram. Brahmacharya ashram, grahastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, sannyas ashram. It's the station, like, you know, the position from which one serves Krishna, but it can also mean the place where they do that service, from which they do that service. So grahastha ashram. There's differences in the ashram, but there's something essentially common, and that is serving the Supreme Lord. Text 3. In that place, Srila Vyasadeva, in his own ashram, which was surrounded by berry trees, sat down to meditate after touching water for purification. So he's following the first of the two instructions. That is, the first instruction was, fix your mind in complete trance upon the personality of Godhead and consider the object, Krishna, from various angles of vision again and again. Fix your mind, and contemplate carefully the absolute truth from different angles of vision. You will get some realization. When you get that realization, that should be the subject matter, exclusive subject matter of the Bhagavatam. And so, here's one of these really, really important verses from the entire Srimad Bhagavatam that reads, Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihate male apashat purusham purnam mayam chatad apashrayam. Translation, thus he fixed his mind perfectly, engaging it by the linking process in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead, along with the external energy, which was under his full control. So, many things. I'll say a few of the many things and we'll do some more tomorrow. Or whenever I do this again. First is the quality of his bhakti was samyak. Samyak means completely, absolutely, 100% complete. Pranihate is engaged and fixed upon. And amale, there's without mala and amala, like the Bhagavatam is called the amala purana, the spotless purana. So amala, his mind had nothing else. There's nothing other of contemplation in his mind than the object, the personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. So that's, you know, he had that capacity. The That's been said all along. The capacity of Vyasa was like that, and he then did that as he was instructed by Narada. Then, apashat purusham purnam. Apashat, he saw the personality of Godhead. Jiva Goswami comments when it says purusham purnam, it means the Lord in his whole abode, because seeing the Lord in his fullness, purnam, means the whole spiritual world. He had darshan of Krishna and his transcendental abode and his associates and the trees and the rivers and the birds and the whole thing. In fullness. Certainly that was an overwhelming experience. But in addition, Cha also, he saw Maya. Mayam Cha. Tad Apashrayam. Taking shelter under him. In the background. He saw Maya was like behind him. And several things. Normally we don't see the Lord because Maya's blocking. Like looking at the sun, you can't see the sun because the trees are blocking, or the house is blocking, or the clouds are blocking, but you can't see the sun. You know the sun is there, you can't see. You know the sun is there because it's light instead of dark at night. But you can't see because something's blocking. So in this case, because of his purity of devotion and concentration on the Supreme Lord, that Supreme Lord showed himself, which means that under his order, Maya moved. Maya blocks, or Maya moves under the order of the Lord. Like we know from Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dyakshena Prakriti, Suyate Sa Characharam. So under his Adyaksha, under his supervision, Maya acts. So Maya doesn't act independently. Maya only acts dependently. So if Krishna says, back off, Maya, she backs off under the Lord's order. So why doesn't he just say back off to everybody? I mean, for everybody's case. Because Maya is doing the service of keeping the unqualified persons away. That's how she sees her services. I don't want persons who are inimical to the Supreme Lord to approach him. They'll make offense. They'll do something rash. And he should not be exposed to that, so that she guards the Lord and keeps people away. Unqualified people. But Maya acts in a different way. That Mahamaya becomes Yogamaya. That helps bring people to Krishna. And it's what's that, the variable, what's that, the switch on, is from our side changing an inimical attitude to a favorable attitude. As we regard Krishna, he reciprocates with us. Eyatamam prapadyante. Tongues the type of bhajam yaham. So, as we regard Krishna, he reciprocates. And if we regard Krishna in an inimical attitude, okay, Maya, take care of this person. They want to be inimical to me, so you make an arrangement so they can forget me and have so many things to do, they don't have time for me and all of that. Just keep them really busy. So, Maya keeps people really busy. In Maya. Struggling, mama Maya, duratyaya. Struggling and struggling and needlessly. It says, give them something to do. Go struggle for a while. Needlessly. But those who surrender to Krishna can easily cross beyond that struggle and be situated in the internal potency. Maya acts this way or that way, depending upon the regard the living entity has for him. So Vyasadeva experienced how Maya, under the order of the Lord, moved from the position of blocking the Lord to behind him or under his control. Then he could see the Lord directly. Now we'll drill down a little more, and there's some very important philosophical points that are being made here. The Lord is a person. That's one of them. Purusham Purnam Apashyat Purusham Purnam. The Absolute Truth is a person. Another important point is there's a distinction between the living entity, the jiva, and Maya. Because there's Maya, and then Vyas is a living entity, and then there's all types of other living entities. And there's a distinction between Maya and the living entity. Maybe it's, you know, pretty fundamental, but this is establishing a fundamental realization, foundational understanding upon which the Bhagavatam is written. Because that's the order of Narada. What you realize, write one literature that expresses that realization. So our acharyas have gone deeply and deeply and deeply, because these are the core verses that are the basis of the Bhagavatam. The living entity and Maya are different. And the living entity and the Supreme Lord are different. Now we're getting into a little bit the essential teachings of Madhvacharya. There's a group of devotees who will be very soon attending a yatra in Udupi. Udupi is the place where Madhvacharya made his headquarters. And in Madhvacharya's teachings, he taught Dvaitavad. Dvaitavad. Vada means doctrine. The doctrine of dualism. When we see pictures of Madhvacharya, what do we see? He has two fingers in the air. Dualism. And he taught there's five different types of distinctions of entities. Pancha Veda. Pancha Veda. Five differences. And this is thematic throughout all of his writings, teachings, and commentaries and everything. So, the living entity and the Supreme Lord distinction. Between one living entity and another living entity, distinction. Between the Lord and matter. Between matter and matter, different types of matter. And between matter and the living entity. So there's Panchaveda, five distinctions. In this verse, there's several of them. The living entity and Maya are distinct. The Lord and Maya are distinct. The living entity and the Lord are distinct. There's three of the five. So, the living entity, jiva, and matter, they're both energies of the Lord. They're prakriti of the Lord. But the Lord is the Lord of his energies. The Lord is a person. And he has his energies. And he's in control of his energies. He can say Maya this and Maya that, and Maya does, because they're under his control. The controllership indicates person. Now, within this nice, rich purport of Prabhupada, we're also getting an indication of the conditioned and the unconditioned states of the living entity. Because there's some living entities that are liberated. There's some living entities that are conditioned. In this description, Vyas is experiencing being unconditioned because there's a direct connection with the Supreme Lord. The conditioned is where you can't see the Supreme Lord, you just see Maya. That's conditioned. And the Lord is neutral. He's the controller of the conditioned and the unconditioned. And he's neutral. It just depends on how they regard him, and then he moves Maya according to their regard for him. Or they'll make it personal. How we regard Krishna determines whether we're in Maya, because we could have a regard for Krishna that says he doesn't exist, or I don't like him, or I don't care for him, or something. So how we regard Krishna determines whether we're conditioned or liberated. What's coming up is, why is there suffering? Like people ask all the time. Why is there suffering? Why do good people have to suffer? And those kinds of things. Why does God create a situation? He's all perfect, he's all powerful, so he can make whatever he wants. He makes a situation where people suffer. How come? So, the fundamental principles behind that kind of a contemplation, theological consideration, is being presented here. I'll read a bit from the purport. Perfect vision of the Absolute Truth is possible only by the linking process of devotional service, confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. One can perfectly realize the Absolute Truth personality guided only by the process of devotional service. He's saying the same thing, just in reverse order. And one can enter into the kingdom of God by such perfect knowledge. Imperfect realization of the Absolute by the partial approach of impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma does not permit anyone to enter the kingdom of God. Sri Narada advised Vyasadeva to become absorbed in transcendental meditation on the personality of God and his activities, not giving special importance to his effulgence or to his expansion within the heart of every living being, but upon the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada covers that topic nicely. The impersonal realization is incomplete. Now here, the Supreme Person has manifold energies, out of which internal, external, and marginal energies are specifically important. The energy mentioned here is the external energy. That's maya, mayam cha tadapashrayam. That's the external energy. The internal energy is there also, along with the Absolute, as the moonlight is there with the moon. Nice. You could say the sunlight is there with the sun also. But sun means light, or moon means light. So the sunlight, the moonlight are there with the sun and the moon. So the energy of the Lord is there with the Lord. That's the statement. Energetic is the source of the energy. Energy doesn't exist on its own apart from energetic. Krishna's energy is his internal potency, is there just by his presence. So when we say he saw the Supreme Sakshat Purusham Purnam, Apashat Purusham Purnam, he saw the Lord in his completeness, means his internal potency he saw also. The word apashrayam suggests that this energy of the Lord is under full control. The internal potency or superior energy is also called maya. You got that? The internal or spiritual energy is also called maya, but it's spiritual maya. The energy exhibited in the absolute realm. So, you know, we have our ISKCON conventional thing with maya. It's, you know, it used to be like this long ago. So-and-so's in maya. And then I fell into maya. Something like that. But technically, the word maya means Krishna's energy, and Krishna's energy is internal, external, marginal. Even those who are atmarama, or fixed in trance, take shelter of the internal energy, or maya. But internal energy. Devotional service, so this is, now this is reaching the conclusion of the purport, and what we are to understand from this. The linking process, because that's what bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranigate male is the verse. So, what is that linking process of bhakti yoga? It's involving the internal energy. Say it reverse. If we don't take up bhakti yoga, we're not connecting with or in contact with the internal energy. We're in contact with another energy, the diluting energy. Say it the other way around. Just by taking up devotional service, we're diminishing the influence of the diluting energy and contacting the internal potency, which connects us directly with Krishna. So it's a fork in the road. We have to choose one or the other. In the beginning stages of devotional service, we want both. We want to keep our baggage and be in relation to Krishna. And it doesn't quite work like that. So we're in this mixed stage of devotional service and not feeling full satisfaction because we want to keep our baggage. Or we have our conditioned tendency that we want to hold on to, or at least think we want to hold on to. Because if we don't have that, what do we have? Looks like nothing. And we want something. So we take our conditioned tendencies and try to take that with us into the spiritual realm. We don't get very far. We just find more of the material experiences again. So we have to rethink the whole, you know, drop our baggage. When I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, we had little skits, like it was a regular part of the Sunday program. It wasn't like a big drama with, you know, so many actors. They would just like in the afternoon put a skit together and put it on, because they're very spontaneous and very busily engaged devotees. So one of the dramas was called Drop Your Rocks. And it was, you know, a devotee's having a kirtan party over here. And they look out, and over on the other side of the river, there's this man walking with this big bundle of rocks on his shoulder. So then somebody would come out and, you know, like a bag, like a cloth, and inside the cloth was stuff. And oh, come on, join our kirtan party. Oh, I got to carry my rocks. Oh, but it's so heavy. Well, just put the rocks down and come join our. No, I've got to carry my rock. The mudha, I get. And he puts him over on this shoulder. That feels better, but now it's so heavy. And, you know, drop your box. Come join it. And the party goes over and joins him and starts dancing, and he puts his rocks down and starts dancing. That was the skit. Drop your rocks. A little more elaborate, but people feel they have all this burden they have to carry. This is the Dhenukasura spirit, the ass carrying. I got to work hard and carry all this heavy load, because what will I do if I don't carry my heavy load? I got to carry all this burden of stuff all the time, because otherwise, what's life without that? But oh, it hurts. And so it's a question of the external potency or the internal potency. Devotional service or bhakti yoga is the function of the internal potency. Thus, there's no place for the inferior energy or material energy, just as there's no place for darkness in the effulgence of spiritual light. Such internal energy is even superior to the spiritual bliss attainable in the conception of impersonal Brahman. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the impersonal Brahman effulgence is also an emanation from the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. The Parama Purusha cannot let anyone, excuse me, cannot be anyone except Krishna himself. So, because that phrase, Parama Purusha, or Purusham Purnam, he saw Krishna. We heard that Narada, just by playing upon his vina, he sees Krishna. So he had attained that capacity after long practice and purification and encouragement from the Lord and continuing further and further, and attained his spiritual body, and then he could always see Krishna just by singing his name. Glorious. So, as the spiritual master, Narada instructed Vyas. Vyas did. Now Vyas is telling us this is what he saw. What did he see? Apashat purusham purnam mayam cha tadapashrayam. The suffering of the living entity, the cause, it's coming up in the next verse, but prelude, the cause of the suffering of the living entity is turning attention away from Krishna. Varieties of suffering, according to the modes of nature and karma, guna and karma, one experiences suffering. Why? Turning attention away from Krishna. Solution: turn attention to Krishna. And what happens? Maya, under the direction of Krishna, goes behind Krishna, under his control, and one has another shelter, the internal potency shelter. It just changes the whole picture, like a kaleidoscope. Just move the kaleidoscope and whoop, it's a whole other picture. You can't even exactly get it back to the way it was to turn it back. It doesn't go back exactly the same way. Just the whole picture changes. I'm still the same me, Krishna is still the same Krishna, and Maya is still the same Maya. But the whole picture changes. It becomes the internal potency instead of the external potency, according to our regard for Krishna. It's that simple. Devotional service is the linking process with Krishna through loving service. And the whole of the Bhagavatam is inviting us into that realm of loving service. To be continued. This is, I'll spend a little bit of time next time I cover this with going a little more into the Jiva Goswami's commentaries from the Sandarbhas and how he analyzes these verses. It's very deep, very, very foundational message. this section of the Bhagavatam is very important. Any questions? Yes.
Vyasadeva is the Lord himself.
Vyasadeva is?
The Lord himself, so...
How's he having all this problem, huh?
Yeah.
He's a empowered incarnation. He's the empowerment is his divinity. But he's taking the position of somebody like us so that he can show by his own example. It's not like he's play-acting. He's being induced by the personality of Godhead to feel the feelings that he's feeling and to express himself the way that he's expressing himself, to appearing to, like, to not know ahead of time if I compile the Vedas in this way, minus the glorification, direct glorification of the Lord, I'm going to feel despondent. He was induced to do so by the Supreme Lord. Similar to something that comes up later in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, where Narada also seems to be bewildered. Now we know Narada has a spiritual body, and we've been hearing all this. He's on the same category or the same platform as the personality of Godhead. Yet he looks at Brahma and says, "Are you not the Supreme? I have thought you're the creator of everything, but I see you meditating, and why do you have to meditate? And upon what are you meditating? There's somebody upon whom you're dependent to do creating? Is there someone greater than you?" So Prabhupada explains, he's induced by the Supreme Lord to take that position that we might have so that Brahma can explain everything so that we can understand. Like Arjuna become bewildered about his duty, although he's Krishna's dearmost friend and devotee. But he's taking that position, he's induced to take that position by Krishna, so we can receive Bhagavad Gita. Same as with Vyas. Nice question. Yes?
Maharaj, before writing the Vedas, Vyasadeva also saw the suffering even in his Kali Yuga. And so he was also compassionate, he was also bring on to the level. Now, before reading the Bhagavatam, you also saw the living is also separate. So what's the difference between both the visions before writing the respective?
Just like, you know, we might look out upon the world and see how much suffering. And think what to do. So he did. And now it's fix the mind completely upon the personality of Godhead in trance. So it's the amalam, it's the difference between sattva and shuddha sattva. And then this connects with her question, that is, I thought he's shuddha sattva. You know, how come he can get down to the sattva instead of shuddha sattva level? It's for our edification. Because elevating people to goodness is also necessary. So he does that. the topmost literature is there for those who are ready for the topmost literature. But the topmost literature is also there even for people who are most unfortunate and very covered, because if they can somehow contact this most elevated literature, they also can become purified. So there's a staircase and there's an elevator.
It so happened that the second one was used for the special master. Previous one was considering my own, even at the Vyasa level. It's
no, not exactly on his own. He's not, you know, simply a speculator. He had a spiritual master. Narada was a spiritual master. And he's highly qualified. You know, it's not some professor that went off and studied Sanskrit and started writing and translating something. That's on his own, that kind of person. Vyasadeva is not on his own, just not complete. While his scholarship was impeccable, there was an essence that was absent. And that's what we're hearing specifically about from Narada to Vyasa, the conversations. And then now Vyasa, under the order of Narada. What is that? That's amala. Without material taint. Anything else? Yeah?
Arjuna mentioned that changing the inimical attitude to favorable attitude to Krishna.
Changing unfavorable to favorable attitude? Okay.
Krishna reciprocates accordingly, and he helps the living entity to get to him.
Fortunately, yes.
I guess I'm trying to ask the living entity.
You lost the thread?
Yeah, I lost the thread. But it seems that the living entity does not to actually become favorable to Krishna. For that also he needs Krishna's mercy. Is that correct? My understanding.
Well, he needs two things. He needs Krishna's mercy and he needs to exercise his free will properly. It's two things, not just one thing.
Yes, Maharaj. I guess I'm trying to ask, like, just the attitude part, just changing from inimical attitude to favorable attitude. For that also he needs Krishna's mercy.
And my answer remains the same.
Okay.
Krishna, so just if it's just, if the only variable is Krishna's mercy, then everyone would be a devotee. Or say it the other way around. If someone's not a devotee, it's because he's not getting Krishna's mercy. But Krishna's extending his mercy like anything, to everybody. Without exception. And they're saying no. So when they're saying no, they get his mercy in another way. Maya. Prabhupada's example is a state. When they form a state, one of the things they have to do is make a prison house. Not like, you know, we can't wait to put all those people in prison. But we make laws that are good for the citizens. And there are persons that say, to heck with your laws. Well, you know, we want to protect our law-abiding citizens, so we make a place for you to live. We don't put you out of existence. We give you a place to live called prison. And you're also under the state. So it's the attitude towards the state, favorable, unfavorable. And then they're choosing. But the state isn't absent of mercy to the persons in prison any more than Krishna's just decided, forget you guys. For no reason, just forget you guys. It's neither is it forget you guys, nor is it for no reason. They've got a defiant attitude. Oh yeah? You're in charge of the state? Well, watch me. I'm not going to pay any attention to you laws of the state. I'm out of here. Into prison. And they're in prison saying, I don't believe in the state. I don't care about your state. Okay, talk like that. You're a crazy man. You're in prison. So it's mercy and choice of free will. Our choice of free will is not sufficient, and it's not that Krishna withholds his mercy from those who are saying no. He's offering his mercy and they're still saying no. So they receive his mercy in a different way. The change for ourselves. We're willfully wanting to move from the position of inimical attitude to a positive attitude. We're practicing devotional service to do that. And then comes the but. But we still lack our independence. Our sense, like this topic of freedom last night, our sense of freedom is, well, what, do I have to really give up my freedom in order to get freedom? What we're getting freedom from is suffering. You just have to let go of those things that are the cause of suffering, and the cause of suffering is an inimical attitude. You can do the same things with complete freedom. More freedom than we can even imagine if we just give up that inimical attitude. And that's what causes the suffering. It seems like paradox, like a double talk. Give up our freedom to get freedom. Give up our false independence. Give up illusion to get reality. And then we have real freedom. It's not that Krishna is withholding his mercy. He's inviting us to join him, and we're resisting, or we're going 10%, 20%, all right, 40%, and slowly. And he's inviting us. The Bhagavatam is inviting us to samyak pranihate amale, complete fixing of the mind upon Krishna. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak praniyate amale. Yes?
Krishna is the controller of everything. Is there anything to do with this karma or with free will manage?
The first part was real easy. Then you took turn and I lost you. Does it have anything to do with
the free will which we use?
Yeah.
And is there anything that's related to karma? That because of our past karma, we use the free will accordingly.
Well, let's unpack this a little bit. Due to our past free will, we now have this package called karma. Now we have our current free will, but our current free will is being influenced by, not dictated by, but influenced by this package called our past free will misuse reactions. Comes as a impelling force. Like, let's say, from the Vedas we understand, if one takes the life of an animal, kills the animal for one's food, the situation will be reversed later on. So supposing we were that animal that was killed and now we're in the human form of life, we have the opportunity to kill another animal. That living entity that's now, we can do that or not do that. The karma is, do it. But we have a free will option. Or to say, somebody is mean to me because of my karma. Now I have an option. I can get mean back. Or I can not get mean back. I can act within the push and pull, the cause and effect, the duality of material energy. Or I can, by my karma, it's a setup. I'm, you know, being sucked into more of the same. Or I can choose by free will to not do that. That's my karma. I still have free will. It's operative. What do I choose to do? The transcendental choice, the mode of goodness choice is you tolerate. The transcendental choice is, let me just think of Krishna. And in the thought of Krishna, what is a proper social and spiritual behavior, spiritually social behavior in relation to the situation and that situation and thus life. You know, you're living in a certain place and you're married and you have children. All that, you can say, all that's karma. Now, what do you can do with that? You can choose Krishna consciousness. It's not that situation dictates your Krishna consciousness. Krishna, the path, the reactions of one's past deeds are given. Now, let me be Krishna conscious. I'll act responsibly and dutifully within my given situation. Good, bad, mix, combination, I accept. Let my mind not budge an inch from serving Krishna's lotus feet. That's a free will choice. Now, the premise of your question, or the first sentence, was Krishna is the controller of everything. So, Krishna knows what our past karma is. Krishna knows also what our free will choices are. And which you think is more important to Krishna? Our free will choice, our loving relationship with Him. He can adjust all that other stuff, or leave all that other stuff, or whatever He wants. What He wants to reciprocate with is how we can come to Him, not how that karma stuff becomes enjoyable stuff, because that's more karma. Trying to make it enjoyable stuff. It's fruitive. It's not devotional. But Krishna may adjust things or not adjust things depending upon the higher principle, what's going to help bring us to Him. He's expert. And He's very loving. And He knows what's best. So a devotee just says yes to the arrangements of Krishna. And all the while is trying to serve Him as best as our ability and purity and intelligence given by Krishna permits. And we're always wishing, always, always wishing to serve Him more nicely. That's love. And whatever He wants to do in this other department, you know, that's His department. He's the controller department. That's His affair. We act responsibly as best we can.
Maharaj, in the same question, but in our case, there is this big baggage we have acquired from so many lifetimes called as karma, and that's going to motivate and determine what we do or how we use our free will.
No, no, it does not.
At least it influences.
It we hold back. There's this. It influences. Yes, it wants to get our undivided attention. And we can choose, no thank you. Like, you know, this is the example of anger. Somebody insults you. And something starts to happen. Like, so that's animal. That's karma. And it's acting. Then you can choose, hey, I don't want to go there. Is there another path for me to go? Yeah, there's another path for you to go. What's that other path? Just take shelter of Krishna. How can I take shelter of Krishna when they just said this, did this really mean, nasty thing, and I don't want to take that line down? So that's just a karmic cause. And a karmic response, and I can say no to that. And as one becomes elevated in Krishna consciousness, even the welling up of anger and, you know, retaliation, getting back, doing something, I'm just going to just let this pass, and so that kind of spirit doesn't even act in the life of a devotee. Pure devotee doesn't even act. Zero. There's this energy coming, and the devotees, like Haridas Thakur, beaten. 21 marketplaces. He's just chanting Hare Krishna. That's inhuman. But, you know, it's the transcendental position. Or Ramchandra Puri, the godbrother of Ishwara Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master, came to visit in Jagannath Puri and was just insulting Lord Chaitanya and his followers unreasonably, unfairly. Or Amogha, the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, fault-finding with Lord Chaitanya where there was no fault. Krishna was being falsely accused of murder. So, if things like that can happen with Lord Chaitanya and Krishna, what to speak of ourselves? And then how do you deal with that? In their case, it's not karma. It's they're teaching us an example. But in our case, it's karma. How do you respond to that? You can dig in and, you know, do combat. Duke it out with the material energy. You don't have to. If you choose to do that, then you're inviting the influence of the material energy into your life. You're getting entangled in the complexities of the laws of nature. The position of a devotee is, they look to Krishna. Krishna, what is appropriate for me to do in this circumstance? Like Arjuna was, I'm out of here. And Krishna's saying, no, you're not out of here. You're on the battlefield. Not out of retaliation, but because it's something I want. I want these people removed from the service of the earth because that's why I came here for. Mother Bhumi came and asked me, please remove these people. So I'm going to remove these people. And I want you to be my instrument, not out of retaliation because they've been unfair, but because it's something I want. So if we act out of what Krishna wants, then it's not, we're not sucked into the material energy. whatever is appropriate for service to Krishna. That's what we do. And that's the criterion for doing, not the pushing and pulling of our karmas. It's still there. But it's dissolved by devotional service. We're inviting the internal energy instead of struggling with the external energy. The energy changes. That's the whole idea. And all the sense of, you know, morality and duty and all based upon material standards, it just fades and is a whole other set of what's really what our duty is, what our transcendental life is. This material sense resembles the spiritual sense, but it's distorted. And it's not elevating, not transcendentally elevating. It's what was not satisfying to Vyas. So it doesn't mean that we, as devotees, we abandon morality, we don't care about anything. You know, we follow those things, but we follow those things because it's pleasing to Krishna. To the degree that that's our consciousness, it's elevating. And without Krishna consciousness, without for the satisfaction of Krishna purpose, it's flat. It's meaningless from a spiritual perspective. Yeah? Interesting discussion this morning. Go ahead.
I was just appreciating how the starting point for the whole Srimad Bhagavatam to be written to us was Vyasadeva's very compassionate feeling contemplation of the living entities.
Yeah.
That he wanted to give them the best and the highest, and he wasn't feeling satisfied.
Exactly.
And I was just thinking how, like you were mentioning yesterday, how when we are suffering, we actually don't know. We don't even know sometimes that we're suffering, and things really begin to change for the better. The spiritual potency comes into our life because some pure devotee contemplates about us in a similar way. And so I was just thinking for myself how important it is to come to the position of purity, to even extend it to others, to... Because it seems like there needs to be at a very human level, like love and compassion,
yep,
for it to be effective.
But then that needs the elevation to the spiritual platform by Narada. The drama is different, but you know the principle is the same with Arjuna. He's this powerful Kshatriya. He's already demonstrated. When he won the hand of Draupadi, he smashed them all the Kauravas, all the kings, all, you know, and when they, the scene when he was in the palace of, during the period of incognito, single-handedly, they were all lined up and he defeated them all. He's like this, you know, powerful. He's ready to walk away. Let him take the kingdom. They had to poison his brother, try to disgrace his wife, you know, cheat it, murder, you know, by laws of Manu, they're punishable. Let them take the kingdom, you know, out of compassion. So Krishna then elevated that to the spiritual position. Same principle. But the wanting to do good, that aspiration, is a beginning point. The natural sense of compassion. But then, is the individual going to be receptive to Narada's message? Like King Pujinibari, when Narada visited his palace. It's the same principle. But when this is the essence, then it's not going to end up where you want it to go. It's going to end up still in the soup, the pool of material energy, wondering what happened. So the transcendental association of Narada-like personalities, absolutely essential. And so that message is coming to us in the form of the Bhagavatam. Exactly, that, you know, that how did the Bhagavatam appear? It started with Vyas thinking in the right direction but missing the target. And then Narada, and then intervened, brought Vyas to another position. Vyas took this other position. Now he's telling us what he realized. And then he compiles Srimad Bhagavatam.
Maharaja, just to follow up on her question and your example that she gave of the kaleidoscope. From my experience, the moment at least it feels the forces that have me grabbed are much stronger than my free will. So the free will, I have to take shelter of Krishna for that free will to really overpower the forces that are behind me.
But that's a free will choice. That itself is a free will choice. And that's the ring. Our free will is not unlimited. We're not Krishna. Krishna's free will is unlimited. Our free will is limited. What's the range of that free will? Krishna or not Krishna?
It's that simple.
Yep. And then it's a variable switch. You know, we want to, you know, not Krishna, but Krishna. Anyway. But that's a free will choice. Taking shelter of Krishna is a free will choice.
And it seems that Krishna gives many opportunities. That means almost it's a recurring theme. The same theme comes over and over.
The challenges are sort of the same. Opportunity to surrender to Him.
And so even if once, I guess I get a glimpse of how it feels, then perhaps the next time,
It's like making a path through a forest where there's just forest. You have to walk down the same path many times before it's a path. Then it's a path. It takes walking down that path many times. Otherwise it's just obstruction.
Srimad Bhagavatam is the commentary on Vedanta Sutra.
Yeah.
Vedanta Sutra is from the Vedas. So
Vyasadeva is summarizing the message of the Vedas in Vedanta Sutra, in codes. You unpack the codes and you get Srimad Bhagavatam.
So in one sense that Bhagavatam is written from the Vedas.
I got what you're saying. I got what you're saying. Say it the other way around, and the essence of the Vedas is the Bhagavatam. However, the essence may not be so apparent. But let's say you have milk, and within milk there's cream. The Bhagavatam is the cream of the Vedas. It was just part of the milk. But the cream floats on the top of the milk, right? You scoop off the cream and you have milk. Or you can homogenize it, it gets all blended and just like suspended. But the cream is at the top, which is part of milk. Does that work?
My understanding is that the Vedas are more indirect.
That's right. That's right, exactly. The right word is indirect. It's there. And it like you say something to somebody indirectly. And the message is there, it's just not so clear. State it directly, it's clear. And some people don't like direct. Indirect. But the Bhagavatam presents even the direct in a very beautiful way. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Like you explained, to use your free will correctly, whether or not to do things where you're working for Krishna, or just continue with your tendencies from acquired karma,
yeah.
It requires a base work of some spiritual realization and then purity. Both of these are gradual. They come with time and they grow with time.
That's right.
Versus the circumstances that you face are like every day, every second, every
That's
moment.
Right. We have choices every second.
So
free will choices every second.
So Maharaj, it seems to me that, you know, for the, as it is feeble strength, spiritual strength that I have, it's the challenges seem to be overwhelmingly powerful than what I have, or the sources that I have to face them with.
Sounds like what Jagatananda said a few minutes ago. Context is different, but the statement is the same. So what did he say when he finds those challenges are they're overwhelming? What to do? What do you do, Jagatananda? What did you say? Repeat.
Most of the time I succumb, but once in a while I make it, and then.
And what make it means what?
Make it means choose Krishna.
What you said was, I turn in a very crying out helpless way. Krishna, please. That you seek the shelter of Krishna's empowerment. So here's take this math. Which is going to be stronger? Your efforts is one option. Or another option is your efforts dependent upon Krishna's transcendental potencies. That's pretty easy. So that's what has to happen. It's opportunities, and he stated it, opportunities are abundantly given to place oneself in a position dependent upon Krishna. And then that which looks overwhelming, Krishna is by your side. Or it's not, you know, it's no longer just your effort, it's Krishna. And you're an instrument. Nimitta mantram bhavya sabji sachin, in the language of Bhagavad Gita. You just become an instrument of Krishna, because it's not you against all this energy. You're just an instrument of Krishna, moving through the field of life, according to how Krishna wants you to move. It's a whole other way of looking at life than what you described. Fundamentally different. Life, from a Krishna conscious perspective, is opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to move through those circumstances of life, whereby, in such a manner that Krishna becomes pleased. You can do some service for Krishna as you're passing through the various circumstances of life, and that's life. So that on the other end, that mood of devotion is with Krishna always. And then, whatever the circumstances are, it's okay because Krishna is there by your side to direct you as the instrument in his hand. Whatever he wants with those circumstances of life. You go back to the other, it's like, okay, I've got to somehow be religious, and I've got all this stuff coming at me, and oh my God, what am I going to do? I don't have the strength. That's the other picture. It's a whole other picture of what life is. The spiritual perspective. You're not alone. You have the option, at once the option of Krishna's internal potency, and it's a whole other picture. A whole other picture. So it's not just your strength, nor is it your plan, even. Krishna has a plan. And your part of Krishna's wonderful plan. Accept it. What's my role in Krishna's plan? Here's this circumstance, here's that circumstance, here's all these circumstances. What's the difference between someone who has a degree of spiritual empowerment and the person that doesn't? It's just the willingness to accept their role in relation to Krishna. It's a free will choice. And then the picture changes. The external energy is converted to internal energy just by that choice. And then there's a series of progressive choices. We choose the internal energy. And that becomes our familiar ground. Like this response to Jagatananda. Just before there's a path through the field, it's just weeds and stuff. You just go up and down and up and down and up and down. It makes a path. It becomes very familiar ground. You can move with ease. And in the beginning, it's just wild. That's because of our neglect. Long neglect. Everything's just weeds and forest. So we have some extra service to do because we've been negligent. But the empowerment isn't less. Just the nature of the service that we have to do is defined because of that neglect. And then once there's that neglect is no longer, and we're very familiar with the ground of the internal potency, then it's just a life of ecstatic service. And challenges don't stop, but the ecstasy doesn't stop either. What do you think I was doing from 5 o'clock in the morning until 6:30 this morning? Reading challenges of international nature. And coming down and speaking to you about how to do it. But trust the process. Krishna is your best friend. And the devotees of the Lord are at Krishna's feet also to be a resource for you, to help you come and touch Krishna's feet and feel the empowerment in doing so. Be an instrument. Be within the internal potency. That it's not, you're not alone. Meeting obstacles is a very exciting and a very wonderful part of Krishna consciousness. Remember when I was in Hyderabad, just before coming back to America, I spoke on this point in two different lectures. One was it was the example of Dhruva Maharaj and the Yakshas and their whole display of their mystic potency, and he was becoming bewildered. He's Dhruva Maharaj. But the brahmanas came and tapped him on the shoulder and said, Dhruva, you're a devotee, don't forget. And the Supreme Lord, he is your protector. Just fix your mind upon the Supreme Lord. And immediately he knew what to do. Just pulled his bow and drew back his arrow, and poof, the whole thing disappeared. Just like that. Just the display of the illusory energy that looks... And we feel overwhelmed because we forgot Krishna. That simple. The kaleidoscope example. Move the... The other example I gave was of Hanuman looking for Sita. And he looked everywhere twice and couldn't find Sita. And he was feeling really, I failed. I was sent on a mission by Ram and I failed. He didn't go into lamentation. Internally, he doubled his determination in service to Ram. And at that moment, he saw in the Ashok Garden what might be Sita, and his heart jumped. And he called. But obstacle is part of life. It's not like obstacles stop when you become a devotee, just you understand how to address obstacles in Krishna consciousness. And if Krishna wants, you can just remove the obstacle. And you can see the situation in a very different manner and proceed in service to Krishna. And I'm not speaking just theoretically. It's from practical experience. I'm thinking of situations that as a new devotee and throughout stages, the situations that looked beyond, and they are. Our job is not to manage the material energy and control it and tame it and make it nice. Our job is to serve Krishna favorably. Krishna is a loving master. He'll help us stay steadfast in our mood and disposition of being his instrument, and things start to change by his arrangement, not by ours. We're not controllers. We're servants. It's nice being servant. I like it. Try to be a controller. That's where the grief is. Don't be a controller. Be a servant. What is grief?